Good morning, everyone. We are gathered around the table this morning. We're down a couple. Pastor Sean and Pastor Steve are not with us at the moment. But Brian is here, Jack is here, and Jonathan is here. And so we're going to look at an article from the Gospel Coalition.
And you are?
And I am Mike. And we're going to talk about... We're going to talk about Disney's new movie called Strange World, and the article was from the Gospel Coalition. It is entitled Disney's Strange World Embodies Strange New World. And I picked the article because I just thought with the direction Disney is headed, it is definitely something that we needed to talk about and be aware of and help people within our church family to be aware of it.
Yeah. So two releases in 2022, Disney's Strange World and Carl Truman's Strange New World. Any youth unfortunate enough to have seen the former should be required to read the latter. Disney's film represents the cultural sickness Truman's book analyzes. It's been quite a year for Disney. The media conglomerate no longer hides its social conditioning aims. Disney executives have recently spoken out about their desire to tell queer stories, full of gender non-conforming characters. Lightyear was a watershed moment in this ambition, but Lightyear was subtle compared to Strange World, the first Disney children's movie to feature an openly gay lead character. The character in question, Ethan Klade, voiced by gay comic Jabuki Young White, is the son of a farmer, Searcher Klade, Jake Gyllenhaal, and the grandson of an explorer, Jagger Klade, which is voiced by Dennis Quaid. The Klades reside in the fantastical world Avalonia, where a natural resource called Pando is harvested for farming and technology. The film's convoluted plot is hard to summarize, but Ethan's homosexuality plays no small part as a romance buds early in the film with another teen boy, Diazo, voiced by Jonathan Mello. It's a flirtation Ethan's parents and grandfather encourage, and the filmmakers clearly want the kindergartners in the audience to assume it's as natural as any romantic relationship. This element would be reason enough to warn parents against Strange World, but it's not the film's only problem. It's also just a bad movie. Driven by a desire to break new representational ground and advance political charged agenda, then by a commitment to serving audiences with an engrossing, entertaining story. When representation matters more than storytelling. Anyone paying attention to Disney's recent output knows how much the studio values representation and inclusion. And while there's certainly value in stories that represent a diverse spectrum of humanity, this is one of my favorite aspects of Dallas Jenkins' The Chosen, for example, when it becomes too glaring as... I don't even know how you pronounce that. Raison d'être?
Yeah.
The narrative tends to suffer. As one critic observed, Strange World tries too hard to earn the diversity merit badge. For example, the protagonist's family consists of a biracial marriage, a gay son, and a three-legged dog. Many other characters represent what appear to be non-binary or non-conforming identities. There are lots of masculine women and feminine men, resulting in what amounts to an ironically not diverse film in the area of gender. When everyone is gender fluid, the beautiful gift of male-female diversity is erased in a sea of indistinguishable sameness. The film is also lacking in one form of diversity essential for compelling drama, the diverse coupling of a good and evil character. Heroes and villains. Of all the unwelcome trends in Disney films, and films generally, in general recently, the notable dearth of the old-school heroes and villains is perhaps the most foreboding. Today, every villain has a sympathetic backstory of trauma, and every hero is a complicated and messy to the point of being unlikable. In Disney films, moral shades of gray have replaced black and white conflict. And the result is the bland celebration of monochrome diversity with low-stakes action. Strange World makes this pretty explicit. At one point, Ethan, Searcher, and Jagger are playing a board game called Primal Outpost. When Ethan explains that in the game there are no bad guys, and the goal is simply to maintain a functioning and harmonious civilization, his father and grandfather protest. "What kind of game has no bad guys?" Searcher says. "That's just poor storytelling," Jagger adds. That's kind of ironic, considering that they articulate that in the movie.
Yeah, I've seen
in
this.
Scripting, but fail to do so in their storytelling.
Yeah, that's bad when a character in the movie actually corrects what they're doing in the movie.
Wow. So Jagger's right. Yet Strange World follows these no bad guys rules itself and poor storytelling results. The only villains in the film are squid-like monsters and pink pterodactyl-type creatures called Reapers. Yet even these are revealed in the end to be misunderstood, not enemies at all. Elsewhere in the film, a political leader voiced by Lucy Liu becomes unsympathetic for a nanosecond before being restored to kumbaya inclusion by the film's end. It's unsurprising that a secularizing society would struggle with categories of good and evil, of course. But the arts suffer as a result. No villains, no drama, no sense of evil, no compelling goodness.
So let's stop for a second and talk about what Brian's already read before we go into a couple of the other topics from the article. So what are your first thoughts, guys?
When I saw the initial trailer, because my family has Disney Plus, when I first saw the initial trailer, it's not appealing. Like, I did, without, before there started being, you know, the insider reviews of it's got a gay character or anything like that, the trailer was just not compelling. Like, oh, I want to watch that. There's just,
That goes for every movie.
Right.
If they can't even make a good trailer,
right,
then you know the rest of the movie is not going to be good.
Or there are other movies where they put together a really good trailer, but the rest of the movie stinks because they used all the good parts.
But at least it had a good trailer.
That's right. Paul Blart Mall Cop was one of those.
Yeah.
I was really looking forward to that comedy years ago when it came out because it had a hilarious...
That's a classic!
All the funny parts are in the trailer.
It's sad that they couldn't even have good parts in this movie to put into a trailer.
The idea that you have an agenda with a movie, and this particular... I mean, that's nothing new in film. That's nothing new in art. It's nothing new in... If you look back at, like, most of the, like, really successful musicals of the past 100 years... if you look back at some books, you're going to always find this theme that the central character is rebelling, in a sense, to societal norms. At least in America, maybe in China or other places, they make art where, you know, everybody just steps in line and that's the way it is. But here in America, that's like a basic theme, right? I mean, it's all about, I mean, it goes way back to Disney's first full feature things. And even farther back to, you know, I mean, just if you think about the musicals that are famous, you know, The Music Man and My Fair Lady and other ones that, you know, there's always a component of it where, look, we're pressing and we're challenging the societal norms, you know, Raisin in the Sun, just on and on. And so this is a compelling thing. But what has always been not wildly popular is this one of pressing... you know, back then, just strictly, pretty much, homosexuality. It's and ironically, the you know, a lot of the Hollywood and those actors were, you know, we find out now they were homosexual. But what do? They pressed it to the side and kept it secret because they wanted to go out there and portray, you know, like in the Brady Bunch, that family dad. Because no one's willing to admit it. But almost everybody just doesn't want to hear that stuff. I mean, that's just the reality. But what we've moved into a society where, everybody gets a participation award. There's no heroes, no villains. You know, everybody's, you know, I hear you, I see you, kind of society. The concept that you would have unacceptable public behavior is being outshouted by a minority, even though internally, I still believe this internally, that most people still hold to there are public, acceptable expressions. And most people would still say that that's, you know, a man expresses masculinity and a woman expresses, at least in some sort of way, femininity.
Well, so it's funny you mention that, Jonathan, because last night in my ethics class that I'm taking right now, we were discussing the fact that for the longest time, a lot of our culture and our nation has been very okay with, you are welcome to think whatever it is you want to think, to believe whatever it is you want to believe. Just don't act out like that. Because once it comes out of you and it starts pushing into something else, as you said, that's when it starts to become offensive. As you were talking about, you know, older actors, is it Cary Grant? Is that the guy in Gone with the Wind who came out later as a homosexual?
Rock Hudson.
Too.
Jim
Nabors.
Yep. Yeah, lots of those.
Yeah, Gomer Pyle.
Yeah. I mean, people that, you know, in the churches that most of us would have been associated with for years, like, those were the shows you could watch. But at the same time, we were kind of talking about it before the mic came on, about the, we've abandoned the idea of, is it a good story to begin with? Like, do you start with the story first, or do you start with the agenda first? And I think where Disney really launched into the animated world was taking stories that already existed and putting them to film or art, animation.
Yeah, so let's go there. Let's go all the way back to Walt. What were the first films that he decided to grab a hold of and bring over?
Everything with dark art.
Anything with witchcraft.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because he himself was a member of Wicca. Or at least legend tells.
Right.
There's some pushback now that wasn't the truth. But that rumor's been around for a long time. And what we see here is, imagine this, you're walking through somebody's home. They've invited you over for the Christmas holidays. You're going to have the Christmas party with your Sunday school class. You're going to walk down there. You might pass their laundry room. You might pass this odd closet in the hallway or something to that effect. And guess what? It's their junk closet. You don't open it to look and see what's inside. You just know that it's disarrayed because yours is at home too.
Right.
That kind of thing. And here's the thing. Disney's always had a closet. It's just they're out of it now.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's
the thing,
Hollywood
though.
Hollywood has always had a
closet. But what I'm saying though is and they chose to pull the items out one at a time, witchcraft, and then they took it to. I mean, if you really stop and think about it, rebellion against authority, you know, they're going to later in this article. It's going to be a big deal about rebelling against parents. Mm-hmm. and the parents saying, Disney's been doing that for years.
Oh, yeah.
They've just been moving it younger. And now they're completely out. But here's the thing. The pushback that happened during the voting season in Florida, one of Disney's main hubs, they got California and they got Florida, and they used to have these two things that were like massive north and south poles creating this magnetic field. But here's the deal. The one over in Florida failed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's failing. Because the Florida people said, and the governor said, we're not going to be ruled by your corporation. And here's the deal. The former CEO, who was only fired 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, I saw that.
Or 10 days ago, was not Bob Iger. They've brought Bob Iger back because Bob Iger is a guy who Steve Jobs said, I hate his guts. I can't stand Bob Iger. He's a moron. And he said it with all the Steve Jobs explicitives that would go with a normal Steve Jobs quote that we're not going to say on a Christian podcast. And here's the thing. Bob Iger brought Steve Jobs to the table. Humbled himself under Jobs' persona and arrogance and brought Apple to the table to the point that they made Iger a member of their board. I mean, this guy is a centrist. They're bringing him back because what they've done is they've realized we've come out too far, too fast, too much. We want the guy who gave us, is Gaston's friend gay or not?
Mm-hmm.
It is, you know what I'm saying? They want the more subtlety back of it. But what they're going to find is they've already opened Pandora's box, and I don't think even Iger's going to be able to shove it back in the closet.
Well, here's the thing. It's a law of numbers, okay? It's a law of numbers. because they're trying to please both sides.
Right, that's why they want Iger.
Yeah, so with Gaston, let's go to your Gaston example. Back then, there were probably discussions in the production room about being more open about that and making it more blatant.
In case someone is missing the context, what we're discussing right now is the live action version of Disney's Beauty and the Beast. LeFou, however you pronounce his name. It came out that he's
the fool.
He's voiced by Josh Gad is the actor. He's the voice of Olaf in the Frozen movies. But he came out at the Quasi came out. That's the thing, is at the end he ends up in women's clothing, which happens in a character ends up in women's clothing in the Battle of the Cartoon. But this happens, but now it's instead of a, I'm terrorized by this, this is so embarrassing, running away, it's like, oh, this is kind of nice, and walks off into the sunset at the end of the movie with another man.
Yeah, and the Gospel Coalition and other articles back then came out like this with articles.
Yep.
About how overt it was. And when you watched it, you went, well, that wasn't as overt as I thought it was going to be. Because, like John said, they had stakeholders to answer to, and they were trying to play both sides of the middle, the centrists. But the CEO that Iger trained and appointed himself, who failed, wasn't that guy. He was like, you know what? We're going to do what we do. This is who we're going to be, and it's the way it's going to be, and everything else. And the board holders and the stockholders and everything went, wait a minute. You're losing us money. I mean, you yourself said Vanity is saying it's going to lose this film's going to lose $100
million.
Yeah, I
saw an article that it's losing $100 million in its box office run.
So you can see why this guy wasn't maintained. You can see why they're bringing back Iger. The question is, are they going to go back to trying to play the middle? Or are they going to say, this is our new middle?
Well, yeah, and I just think it shows just how out of touch... Trump and others, politicians in general, depending whether you're on whatever side you're on, one of the claims is, well, they're always out of touch. They're out of step with what's going on in the real world, yada, yada, yada. But this just shows you how out of touch they are, because not only, I mean, okay, if you were going to do this, if I was on the board and this was the direction we were going to go, and I knew that I was going to alienate a whole bunch of people who... So look here, my daughter bought the tickets, and then when I sent her the note and I said, hey, check this out, she went back to the thing and they gave her money back. She got a refund, which surprised me. I didn't think they would even do that.
And that's what has to happen.
Right. And so my point is... they're so out of touch because if you were going to do this, what you should do is you should pull in your best people and make your best movie ever if you were going to do this. Because it has two failing properties, this whole thing. Plus, it's just a ridiculous, terrible movie.
Right. Well, that was the thing.
What
right,
people want to watch.
As I was plugging in the microphone, Mike and I were talking about that. It would be an interesting statistical analysis to see who are the directors and who are the producers of these progressive movies. Who did Strange World? Who did Lightyear? Even Turning Red, it's mentioned here later. Turning Red wasn't a good movie. And these newer animation movies, they're lousy. Like, they don't have those elements that some of the classic Disney ones want. I'm on board with it. I grew up in a home in which I was not allowed to watch The Little Mermaid because two reasons. One, she was immodestly dressed, and two, she rebelled against her father.
Right, yep.
Dagon had nothing to do with it?
No.
The god Dagon?
No.
Of the Philistines?
No.
Half fish, half man?
Yeah.
Did not.
And how does his like little electrical thing not shock him underwater? That's what I want.
Okay, Brian. Anyway, back to the story.
But the point is like even a movie like The Little Mermaid, it has a clearly defined good guy, clearly defined bad guy. Sure, there is the progressive agenda of the misunderstanding father and the child who just wants to do what it is they want. But in what Disney did well. Was they kept the good guy, bad guy storyline. They told a story that had a beginning and an ending, and it transitioned through, and it had some phenomenal music to go with it. The I'm blanking on his name. Is it Randy Newman? Is one of the composers. Yes. That did, he does all the...
You've got a friend in me.
Toy Story.
Yeah.
His name, we listen to a lot of Pandora at the house, and so that image, the album cover will be up there, but it always has the composer or the singer there. And it just, like, Newman's name pops up about every single time a Disney song that's worth anything shows up. And we were talking about also with John Williams, that, you know, there are these people that they create quality products. And because they have their name recognition now, that's what they get. And that's where Disney's failing on this, which goes back to your point, Jack, on what I hope they don't do is go get the best animation directors, go get the Newmans of the world, go get those story writers, and then get them to write these agendas. Okay, so, that's when Disney will succeed in their agenda push.
Okay, but that's the problem. They've already done that. You see, Disney bought Pixar from Apple. Disney's owned by ABC. And ABC Corporation has already had this situation where Iger, they took over Miramax Studios. They took over Pixar. They took over, and the list goes on and on and on. And then they had to distance themselves from hashtag MeTooWeinstein. Then they had to distance themselves from, and through all of that shark-infested water of hashtag MeToo, COVID, and everything else, Iger was able to navigate and hold them in the center. And then as soon as he unleashed his reins and turned it over to this guy pops out these projects. And they're being made by the best animators in the world right now, as far as we would say leading animation studios. I mean, they own Lucasfilms.
Right.
They own Marvel.
Yep.
I mean, there's just, you go on and on and on, and their streaming platform is failing because of wokeism. Their box office failing because of wokeism. And that's why they're trying to bring back the centrist guy. But here's the thing that it was really remarkable. We had this in staff devotions yesterday for the faculty. And then you sent this article, and it seemed to epitomize what we had just talked about. And it was this, 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 9, "Furthermore, those whose goal is to be rich fall into temptation. They get trapped in many foolish and hurtful ambitions, which plunge them into ruin and destruction." Will the Christian community stop playing the "we were okay with Pirates of the Caribbean," teaching us that the bad guys of history who were rebelling against authority are the good guys of film? Will we push back against "dad is stupid and knows nothing"? Will we push back in the new "I am God and you have no right to tell me how I am created" mentality of life that is prevalent from adult to child? And will we push back? Will we do what Kaylee did? Will we go and get refunds on our tickets when we find the truth? Will we get up 3 minutes into the film and walk out and demand our money back? Will we do these things so that they plunge into ruin and destruction? Or are we going to continue to prop them up and say it's okay?
And I got, there's another part.
Can we hold a second, Jonathan? Sure. Let's go ahead and look at the topics, finish out the article, and see the other topic areas that we need to make sure the people that are aware of. It's not just the gender issue.
It's like the father doesn't know best.
Yeah, right. So, Brian, if you'll pick
it up. So, another bad message in Strange World is a familiar one in recent Disney fare. Kids know better than their parents. The subversion of parental authority was horrifying in this year's Turning Red. "My panda, my choice, Mom." And it's horrifying here, too. When Ethan says he feels more in his element exploring strange, transgressive new worlds than he does living on the boring old farm with his family, his mom unquestioningly encourages it. Keep exploring those feelings. Such is the spirit of the age, expecting a son or a daughter to follow the vocational footsteps, let alone the religious tradition, of his or her parents is today considered confining at best and toxic at worst. Certainly, there's valid drama to mine in generational tension and the burden of family expectations, but Turning Red and Strange World go beyond this and essentially sanctify youth identity and follow-your-heart autonomy. Perhaps the truest word spoken in the film is by Searcher when he calls out his son, "You're a kid, you don't know what you want." Yet Searcher feels immediately guilty for saying this. And, as if anything less than total endorsement of Ethan's every volatile decision is parental abuse. Naturally, by the end of the film, Ethan launches out on his own, ending with a monologue about how the world has changed and we can't live in the past. Translation, whatever my generation feels to be true trumps whatever wisdom we received from our forebears. Don't destroy nature, but feel free to deny it. One of the other heavy-handed messages in Strange World is its thinly veiled environmentalist argument. Greedy capitalism is ruining the natural world. As the characters in World come to see, spoiler alert, the world beneath their feet is a living being, literally a turtle, they're killing it by utilizing its resources for their technology. I'm all for environmental stewardship and have argued there's a logical coherence between pro-life, pro-family, pro-tradition, traditional marriage positions, and pro-ecology position. All involve a willingness to place God's created order above our self-centered follow-your-heart whims. This means for Christians, honoring God's creation involves both accepting its reality, even when it constrains our expressive individualism, example, our given biology when we wish we were another gender, and stewarding its given goodness even when it constrains our unfettered business and economic expansion. Strange World, meanwhile, reveals an incongruence pervasive in progressivism today. How does one critique environmental destruction that results from meddling with natural processes or systems while simultaneously denying nature's organic design when it comes to the inconvenient binary of biological sex and procreation or the inconvenient realities of fetal life? Yet, this incoherence is taken as orthodoxy in progressivism today, and it's on glaring display in Strange World. No true north. Perhaps fittingly for its lost in an unknown world narrative, Strange World feels adrift in a void of meaning. When one character says, "We're definitely off the map now," she might as well be describing the movie as a whole. That's because Disney of today lacks the moral compass and meta-narrative assumptions of the Disney Walt knew. Disney has never been perfect, of course, but in earlier eras it championed family, faith, and wonder over against the values of modernity. An example, Mary Poppins. In Peter Pan, 1953, John Michael and Wendy Darling may have had a parentless adventure in Neverland, but ultimately they realized the structure and nurture of the home is the best place for young people to flourish. Neverland's lost boys are children in need of parental wisdom, not children who are better off without it. And even as recently as films like Beauty and the Beast in 1991, the value of sacrificial love takes precedence over expressive individualism. In today's Disney, parental wisdom and sacrificial love are lesser values than diverse representation and follow-your-heart morality, which necessarily breeds narrative incoherence. Despite bombing at the box office, a pattern with recent LGBT advocacy films like Bros and Lightyear, children's movies like Strange World will only become more numerous and brazen in the years to come. Disney has been clear on this, whether or not audiences want to watch. Other studios will follow suit. Christian parents, be ready. We should be aware of these films not only in a defensive way, prohibiting our kids from watching, but in a way that prompts proactive resistance to the cultural values they embody. Because if kids don't encounter these messages on Disney+, they'll no doubt encounter them in 100 other places. Whether we like it or not, these films are being made not only to change young hearts and minds, but also to reflect young hearts and minds. The erroneous assumptions of the strange new world Carl Truman describes are not strange at all to most members of Gen Z. They're normal. This presents a challenge for Christian parents and leaders as we disciple the next generation. If we want to present a biblically grounded reality that can compete for and ultimately win the hearts and minds of our kids, our work is cut out for us. Being cautious about problematic Disney movies is a place to start. but it's not the place to end. We need to tell beautiful stories and cultivate institutions that can make the strange world of Christ's kingdom less strange and more real than whatever surreal worlds our secular age concocts.
Okay.
So we hit those three big stories lines there about parents don't know anything, children know everything, capitalism is bad, environment is good, and that there doesn't need to be a true north, or does not need to be absolute truth, or does not need to be right or wrong. And so, again, it's just not a gender failing in the movie. There's multiple areas that are failing. Jonathan, I cut you off a moment ago so that we could see those three other major areas. Let's go back to what you were thinking.
Well, the first thing I was thinking is, you know, this is all negative. Like, don't go see this. Disney's going down the tubes if it wasn't, you know, from the start, whatever you want to argue. I mean, there's definitely been a shift. You look around and you see, I mean, even now commercials more and more are showing gender, same-sex partners, and you know, even using words like husband and all that kind of stuff. And so when you look around, it seems really negative. And it is. I mean, it's discouraging. It can be. But the reality is, you know, the gospel still is powerful.
Yes.
And I think we need to start there, and we need to stay there. But at the same time, there's something in the back of my mind that says, and I've just always been like this, you know, why don't we also go on the offensive? So the question is, then,
why are we not making animation movies?
Right. The question is, why are we so bad at it? Why are Christian movies, when you say, if you want to communicate that the movie was not very good, you say, well, it's kind of like a Christian movie. Mm-hmm. You know, why have we done that? And I think that part of the reason is, when we first encounter something that's new, we just have this general tendency to say, that's bad, stay away from it, until it gains so much steam that we can't ignore it anymore, and the enemy has grabbed and used it. And so I just hope that going forward, more artistic people, more creative people, people who love the gospel, are willing to do exactly this. Because you know the number of times I've been trying to prepare a message or something, and I go, I would really love to have an image that shows, you know, a particular Bible event, a Bible narrative. And you go and look, and they're like all, you know, flannel graph looking. And I'm like, can't someone do something really well so that I can have just an image to put on a slide that shows just the excellence of the true narrative? Because, you know, here, just in the past few weeks, the true narrative of Genesis, with all the emotion running through it, with Jacob coming back to Joseph, in my mind, I'm just like, the music starts playing and the cinematic thing starts showing the narrative and the story. And I just think, you know, I think as Christians, we also have a tendency to be so, well, I'm Reformed, he's not, I can't make a movie with him.
Okay. You know, that kind of stuff. I think that's the challenge. We as Christians want things to be Christian, but then we start to argue about, is it Christian enough, or is it the right Christian or the wrong Christian?
Ooh.
And so then,
and then we get nothing done.
Yeah.
Well, that led to our to the devotion that I started with anyways, because we had four Christian men tearing apart Hillsong, and one was rip out everything. Another was, well, let's discern, is it actually a valid song and they wandered into truth in making it, or is this one heresy kind of deal? And then another one was like, hey, it's okay, but all four of them's families are completely torn apart and ravaged to the point that I wouldn't even look to them as role models in any way, shape, or form of how to raise a family. And they're just tearing it out. And a kingdom divided cannot stand. And I'm looking at all this. Here's what I see as a central problem. And John, I think you brought the first point of it out. Is one, let's start with the gospel. How are we evangelizing our children? I mean, let's be honest. The statistics show by the decline of Christianity, we suck. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's just go there.
Yeah.
I mean, and on top of that, I work at a Christian school, and the root, what makes it a Christian school is our beliefs. What makes it a Christian school is our faculty, our administration. That's what makes it a Christian school, as Christian as it will ever be. Now, our statements will be far more Christian than our people working in it, because our Christian, because our statements are founded strictly on God's word. The reason why I say that it'll be more Christian than the people working in it, because we're sinners. And we're going to do our best to live up to those words.
And our statement is not pushed by society changes, but the people are.
Right. So then, but on top of that, what happens is parents look at the kids within the school, and they look at their kid and the other kids around them, and they get upset about it. And the fact of the matter is that's evangelism. I mean, I hate to say this, but I would not classify most of the teenagers in this church as saved based upon the fruit. Correct. And by their fruit, they should be known. Mm-hmm. Okay? In the same essence, I wouldn't say the same thing about the other churches that are in Berean either. I would say that overall Christianity is hurting in that field, which is one of the reasons why I've placed some things on the table. And hopefully we get a chance to talk about them, and things come of it. And in it, there's a new starting point in that aspect. The second thing that I see wrong in here is even this article lacks taking the next step of critical thinking. Okay, so you go back to the don't destroy nature, but feel free to deny it. Okay, so here's the fact. If I put an airport in a city, and I take eminent domain to claim land, and I put an airport into a city, am I going to harm the ecosystem? The answer has to be
yes.
So how and to what degree in stewardship should I harm, and what control measures should be placed? Okay, but I can't go so far as the environmentalist who says, okay, well, gasoline and the mining of fuel causes the destruction of sagebrush or sage grass on the Indian lands and reservations and other places, where it then creates this loss of habitat. Okay, got it. So we should go to solar energy, and we should use the same footprint of land to do solar energy. Okay? What's going to happen to the sage grass when you put in the solar panels?
Yeah.
You're going to rip them out. Okay. Now you have the same problem, different solution, but one's more favorable in society's mind now.
It looks better.
Now, don't get me wrong. There should be so much measures that it doesn't trickle into their drinking water. That leaks shouldn't be hidden and things of that nature, and water contamination should be a foremost thought process in all of it. But the fact of the matter is if we're going to progress and have anything that we enjoy, somebody has to pay for it, and some ecosystem is going to have to adapt to it.
Well, that's the idea of dominion, and what's the problem is, we are arguing from two different point of views.
Mm-hmm.
We're arguing from a standpoint of dominion. So when you say, you know, God gave us the earth to have dominion over it, it's there to serve us as humans. That's the way God shapes it in Genesis, and that's what we believe. But the environmentalists, or most environmentalists, don't believe that. That's why you see these themes in these movies where the human is the evil one and the earth is the glorified entity.
You mean turtle.
The turtle, yeah. And so the problem is, we have to learn, like you're talking about critical thinking, we have to learn to engage them first upon the terms of the discussion. Because I cannot enter into a negotiation or discussion with somebody if we are not congruent on the terms.
Right, and then we also have to then take it into its broader aspects.
And we're really bad at that in both, not just Christianity, but conservatism and other things, because we are so willing to just go quickly to the talking points, these upper echelon things, but we never get to the root of the issue. And so children and the reason that's important, aren't challenged to think about the root of the issue.
Yeah.
And they think about, how does it affect me? What's in it for me? At the top
okay.
of this.
And you don't get to this level. Okay, so let's take, and I'm trying to pick things that aren't necessarily in this article, but they're not killing us, okay? So you take this idea, vegetarians, right? Okay, when it's not a health choice and it's about, you don't want to kill an animal. You don't want to kill an animal, you don't want to kill an animal, okay? Got it. But when you plow the ground to plant a garden, and you do this and that, you're going to destroy some insects, some animals, something that God created that is exclusively dependent upon grass and not the soil itself. Okay, but they're not going to eat the plants that you may plant because they are grass. So the real question is how cute does the face have to be before right. it's wrong to kill it?
Right, yeah.
How small? How small, how big. I mean, and those are the kind of things that we're not teaching anyone to
ask. Do you stop the spider that runs up, you know?
So, since it's about time for prayer time, let's pull to a close. Brian, last thoughts?
Where we need to go next, based upon Jonathan's conversation, is... yes, we know Disney sucks. So then we need to go talk about Angel Studios.
Okay.
And The Chosen and the animated movie David that the Angel Studios is working on.
Okay.
Because then that's leaving behind the secular world and going into at least a religious world in which there's just as much arguing.
Yeah, and we need to learn, and I know you want to talk about the arguing maybe in a future podcast. But my just general thing is we need to learn to support these things because the reality also, we didn't talk about a lot about this, but it comes down to the money. I mean, a lot of reason why Pixar Studios and all of those things are able to do what they do is money and getting investors on board. And we're just really bad at that. And I say we, you know, Christians, people who want to have these messages that are countercultural. Yep.
So in closing, reading the last sentence in the article again, we need to tell beautiful stories and cultivate institutions that can make the strange world of Christ's kingdom less strange and more real than whatever surreal worlds our secular age concocts. Mm-hmm. So as believers, we need to be elevating the story of God more and more in our own lives, in the lives that God brings around us, so that people can see the awesomeness of God. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what we need to be doing more and more as much as possible.
And, you know, we want big movies, but parents, you can do this with your words every day, and you should.
Yes. And so every household, you need to embody this as the parents are the chief disciple makers of their own children. We need to encourage this with each other within our church family. Thank you all for listening today, and hope you have a great day.